Ladies and gentlemen, jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this Monday edition of the Hagman Report. Today is Monday, August 21st, 2017. We're coming to you live from the Hagman Studios, where you can hear us live on Global Star Radio Network, Blog Talk Radio, as well as watch us live on YouTube. Now, today we have audio only. We got a visual presentation we're going to bring you with the show today. So strap in. We got Peter Chowka coming up in the first hour, followed by Doc Marquis and John Robertson. But John is with me here. He's going to do the show with me. He's going to be here in the first hour with Peter Chowka and myself. John, we just did the Daily Show a little bit ago. It's great to have you on this show.
Well, thank you for having me, and greetings and God's blessings to everyone checking in with us here on this Monday, August 21st. I can't believe how fast the month is going by. And folks, as the title of the show indicates tonight, the mainstream media is the necropolis of lies. And between Peter Barry-Chowka, myself, Doc Marquis, Joe Hagman, we're going to do our best to parse through what we're being told today about a number of different topics. Now, Joe, I know you wanted to start off with the situation with the USS John McCain.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a much bigger story, I believe, than is being reported. Now, folks, if you remember, not too long ago, the USS Fitzgerald was hit by a cargo ship in the Sea of Japan, I believe, in Japanese waters. And there was a lot of mystery surrounding that accident. Well, today, the USS John McCain was struck in those same waters. And as the mainstream media is not reporting, many people are indicating, for a number of good reasons, that the ship came under electronic attack before it was struck. It's obvious by the pattern on the ship that was hit, the John McCain, that the ship was not moving when it was struck. Then a report came out that stated the electronical systems as well as the power steering were malfunctioning or had malfunctioned, leaving the ship to what I believe was dead in the water. Now we're seeing reports the Navy halts Pacific Fleet operations, and I don't remember any time in history that this has happened before, and I do believe the Navy thinks something is going on. But to have two U.S. destroyers in just as many months struck, or maybe not as many months, I guess that Fitzgerald was in June, in this summer, the last two months, to have two Navy ships hit in the same area, the Asian, Japan body of water. Both ships were struck without, you know, bells and whistles going off, and both incidents left U.S. Navy personnel dead. At last count, there was 10 missing. I don't know if there's a new count, or even if they've found any of the soldiers or bodies, whatever the case may be. But definitely very disturbing to think what could be going on. It makes you wonder, you know, what did Obama, what did Clinton, what did these people, what kind of technology was sold under the last administration? We know, John, you mentioned this earlier, that there was a Russian, there's an incident with a Russian plane and a U.S. ship where it disabled its communication systems.
Absolutely.
I believe that's the case here. I believe that we're being electronically attacked while these ships are over there in the water and being rammed. If you go back and look at the path of the container ship that struck the USS Fitzgerald, we went over this before, but it's very suspicious because the ship got real close to the Fitzgerald about a half hour before the collision, then went back out into sea for a few miles, did a U-turn, and came right back in and smashed the ship before making another U-turn and going back on its chartered course. There's still a lot of questions about this wreck today, but I believe people inside the government, inside the Navy, are concerned. And I don't believe we're getting the full story from anybody.
Well, Joe, if folks care to, they can go to abcnews.go.com, and they've done a fine job enumerating the four, I guess they're currently accidents, that you suggested. The first dating all the way back to May 9th, this in the Sea of Japan, right near, just east of the South Korean portion of the Korean Peninsula, the USS Champlain collides with a fishing boat. That was May 9th. The first one was January 31st. The USS Antietam runs aground off Japan. Now, folks, that's on the opposite side of the nation of Japan, on the east coast side. June 17th, as Joe mentioned, the USS Fitzgerald collides with a container ship. And then, of course, the reports from today, August 21st, the USS John McCain collides with a merchant ship. But
and to rephrase those, these ships collided with the destroyers.
Correct. That's and so there's obviously more questions here than answers. But what Joe and I touched on earlier on the Hagman Daily Show, a couple of things to consider, folks. First off, the USS Donald Cook. Now, most of our listeners probably remember that in both 2014 and 2013, there were two separate incidents with the Donald Cook, and I believe the Donald Cook is in the same class destroyer as the Fitzgerald, where a single Russian aircraft was able to somehow disable the communications infrastructure of the Donald Cook to the point where a number of naval personnel, a couple of officers and about 15 enlisted personnel, quit at the next they quit the U.S. Navy at the next port of call, which I believe was in Romania. Again, folks, the USS Donald Cook in 2013 and 2014. But another thing that we're going to be keeping an eye on here at the Hagman Report is what's going on at this particular base that
Yokosuka.
Yes, that these vessels are departing from prior to these accidents. And we're just going to do a little investigative research, see if there are any contractors, be they military or civilian, particularly suppliers or companies that maintain the navigation systems or the communication systems. And folks, I'd like to encourage all of our naval veterans to reach out to us. You can hit us up at studio@hagmanandhagman.com. Remember, two N's on Hagman, and spell out the word and. But send us an email if you've got some expertise, some opinions, and help us out, especially our naval veterans.
Absolutely. Now, tonight, folks, we have with us Peter Chowka. He is the writer for American Thinker, also an author, as well as writer and contributor for Hagman Report. And he was with us on The Daily Show. He was our first guest on The Daily Show last Friday. And, folks, if you haven't heard about our new shows, check them out. The Doug Hagman Show, 9 to 10 a.m. every morning, Monday through Friday, on Global Star Channel 3, as well as on Blog Talk Radio. Also, podcasts are available for archive, as well as The Hagman Daily Show from 2 to 3 p.m. each day, Monday through Friday, same as The Hagman Daily Show, or The Doug Hagman Show, with the archives and the channels, Global Star Channel 3, as well as Blog Talk. And we want to encourage each and every one of you guys to tune in and listen to those shows and offer some feedback if you have any. Without any more, Peter, it's great to have you back on the show.
Oh, thank you, Joe. It's good to be with you and John today.
It's great to have you. We just talked last Friday, as I just said, on the Hagman Daily Show. We had a great interview. I know you have some things you want to talk about as far as Fox News, what's going on there, inside and outside, what's being reported and what's not being reported. And Peter, do you have any thoughts on this latest Navy incident with the USS John McCain?
Well, you know, I was listening intently to your discussion of it with John at the start of the show today, and I actually don't, because I haven't had a chance to really look into it, although what I was picking up from your discussion is how complicated the world is that we're living in now. And, you know, we rely on the mainstream news media. That's where we heard about the reports of the naval accident. But then you dig down into the layers, and later on maybe you get closer to the truth. Those initial reports usually are not too reliable, even if they're well-intentioned on the part of the reporters close to the scene. But, you know, it just suggests again that we really don't have a clue what's going on, especially in these far corners of the world where our troops, our naval forces, our spies are spread out all over the place, and which suggests, again, that it's really more than a full-time job to try to keep up with all of the news that's happening and really get to the bottom of it so that it makes sense.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, this is there seems to be some kind of pattern here with the Navy ships being attacked, being sitting dead in the water in the same area, same seas, used by the same ports, and then to have, you know, this second, just this summer since June, the second deadly encounter, they're calling it an accident, I don't believe it was an accident, is very concerning, and to the point where they shut down the whole Pacific Fleet Command, that's a little alarming. They're going to suspend any ongoing missions or operations for 24 hours and do a massive review, and even General Mattis had called for an investigation into the after the McCain incident today, called for an investigation into all the latest naval accidents that have happened. I don't know if there is a threat, if there was electronic attacks that led to this attack, either on purpose or not, that we would, in the, as the public, ever hear the truth from the Navy. But that's still
right. Well,
doesn't mean
you
that.
You probably heard, Joe, that speaking of electronic attacks, it's been in the news briefly that in at the United States Embassy in Havana, Cuba, there is mounting evidence that some kind of electronic attack was directed at some of the top American diplomats there, causing them detrimental health effects, including deafness, loss of their hearing. And we're not hearing very much about that either. I mean, I think suspicion in the case of what happened to this naval vessel, suspicion in terms of was it some sort of directed electronic sabotage is absolutely well warranted. I mean, we're living in a sea of electronic surveillance and sabotage. So, you know, why not at least inquire about that possibility? But you're right. We probably are not going to hear very much about it through the Defense Department or the mainstream media.
Peter, a question for you, just to educate our listeners and viewers here this evening, myself included. Now, you have many decades' experience as an investigative journalist. Explain to us a little bit, if you would, please, how, when we look at a situation like this collision with the USS John McCain, I'm also looking at USA Today, Cuba diplomats ousted after bizarre incident with U.S. embassy workers in Havana. In these situations with the government involved, the military involved, do journalists have to typically just rely on the media liaison from the Department of the Navy, or in this case, the embassy in Havana, or are they able to access information from a more objective point of view?
Well, accessing information that resides with the government is difficult in any case, and it's compounded when it has a military or a you know, anything having to do with military secrets, diplomatic secrets involved with it. It compounds the problem for the journalist. And then you also have to keep in mind that, sadly, for most so-called journalists today, they are not interested in really getting the true story, in my opinion. I mean, there are some notable exceptions. In fact, one of them was on Sean Hannity's radio show today, Sarah Carter of Circa News, who broke some new news on Hannity's show today. She's been doing incredible investigative reporting on the efforts to bring down the Trump administration. But, you know, when you have the military involved, they're going to zip it up, and you're going to have to rely on sources that you might have developed. But then, of course, those sources are very paranoid, especially now. And, you know, this is why we, sometimes decades later, we don't get to the bottom of some stories that were in the news. I mean, we still haven't gotten to the bottom of the JFK assassination 54 years later now. So, you know, it remains to be seen if we'll be able to nail this one down. But I hope there's a few intrepid reporters out there, and oddly enough, some of the best reporting is coming from other countries like England, United Kingdom. The Daily Mail newspaper over there in London, England, has been consistently doing some of the best reporting overall in the mainstream media, in that case the mainstream British media. So maybe it will be the foreign press or the Asian press, who knows, that comes up with an answer to this conundrum.
Maybe. As I said before, I don't believe we will ever get straight answers. And you mentioned something important about the embassy, U.S. embassy in Havana, Cuba, where there were some kind of sound attacks on a number of U.S. officials and some Canadian officials. Just last week, they reported that the number was far greater than what they first reported, and they didn't give specifics. But there have been ambassadors that have lost hearing and have other physical symptoms, you know, being sick, headaches, and there is definitely some kind of sound weapon that was being utilized down there. And it's, as John pointed out earlier, we had the Russian plane knock out the communications to one of the ships not too long ago. We know that other countries have the capabilities, because I believe our government has sold them or has let them slip out for whatever reason, probably intentional, probably has to do with corruption and money. But either way, it is time for the Navy to start rethinking their systems and how to harden their systems if this is the case that it's an electronic attack, so that this doesn't happen again. Peter, I know you have some stuff you want to get into. I just want to hit this one headline, and I want to get your thoughts on this if you want to comment. The Pope, there's an article today on Drudge Report. The Pope wants all countries to take in refugees regardless of the national security concerns. Pope Francis on Monday took a strong stand in defense of migrants' dignity on Monday, noting that Jesus' message is rooted in welcoming the rejected strangers of every age. Francis' politically pointed message was made in view of the Catholic Church's 2018 World Refugee Day, and where he goes on to say that the principle of ensuring each person's dignity obliges us to always prioritize personal safety over national security. Obviously, the Vatican has a wall. He's been one big mouthpiece for the politically correct agenda, completely abandoning much of the word in doing so. But I find it hard to believe, well, I guess not hard to believe, hard to hear from the Pope that he says, forget national security, you let the migrants come in your country. That's pretty crazy. He likes to stick his nose in, and he always seems to be on the wrong side of not only our views, but also the biblical views, and for different reasons.
Yeah, you've got that right, Joe. I mean, whenever I hear the latest pronouncement from Pope Francis, I tend to tune it out, because otherwise it just makes me angry, and I really don't want to be angry at a man of the cloth like him who represents 1 billion-plus Roman Catholics. But when you compare him to his predecessors, Pope Benedict and Pope John Paul, who were very relatively, compared to him, conservative, and who actually had some achievements. I mean, Benedict was really trying to hold the line at more traditional Christian and Catholic dogma in the face of this onslaught of politically correct theology, which has taken over so much of Christianity, Protestantism, and Roman Catholicism. And, of course, he retired. And the Pope before him, who's credited with helping to collaborate with Ronald Reagan and other conservatives to help to bring down communism in Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union, the Polish Pope. So those were tough acts to follow, and in my opinion, this Pope is just not up to the job. And I wish he would retire, but I fear that the next pope in line will probably be even worse, more liberal, more progressive, more politically correct, more green, as times go on here.
No, you're exactly right.
Peter, I'd like to move next. I want to get into your recent post at HagmanReport.com entitled Civil War Breaking Out at Fox News. But before we do, I think listeners might find this interesting. This ties back into the story about what happened at the Cuban embassy. Really, as Joe pointed out, an underreported story. and I was able to pull this up quickly. This is from USA Today, their tech section, and this is posted all the way back on November 7th, 2005. I'll just go over this quickly, Peter. I'd like to hear your opinion on this and also just see if you remember this. It says, Dateline Miami, the crew of a luxury cruise ship used a sonic weapon that blasts ear-splitting noise in a directed beam while being attacked by a gang of pirates off Africa this weekend, the cruise line said Monday. The Seabourn Spirit, that's the name of the vessel, had a long-range acoustic device, or LRAD, installed as part of its defense systems, said Bruce Good, a spokesman for Miami-based Seabourn Cruise Line. The article goes on to say, the LRAD is a so-called non-lethal weapon developed for the U.S. military after the year 2000, attack on the USS Cole off Yemen as a way to keep operators of small boats from approaching U.S. warships. And then the article concludes by saying, the devices have been deployed on commercial and naval vessels worldwide since the summer of 2003. A little bit of a strange story. Do you remember that one, Peter?
No, but I actually saw it. Wasn't this republished recently? I saw that linked recently and scanned the beginning of it. But I don't remember it from the time, but it certainly is interesting, and it suggests that there's a lot that we're not getting reporting on, not only in that area, which was published in an IT technology section of USA Today, but the reason for this kind of a weapon is because of the tremendous activity in the world's oceans, particularly east of Africa, I believe, the African continent, of hijackers who try to take over boats and then hold them for ransom, whether they're shipping containers or passenger vessels. So, you know, again, we're getting so little foreign news anyway. When you mentioned I've been an investigative journalist for a long time, and even longer than that, I've paid attention to the news since I was very, very young. And I remember back in the day, the late 50s, the 1960s, the mainstream media did a lot of reporting on foreign news. Of course, you could make the case there was a lot happening then with the Cold War, but the major broadcast channels, the newspapers, the news weeklies had bureaus, foreign bureaus all over the world, as well as domestically here in the United States. Now they've pretty much closed all of those down, and they're relying on Facebook and Twitter for their news, which they then republish without anybody on the ground. And there's just whole swaths of the planet, whole areas that we're just not getting anything like comprehensive reporting on. And then, of course, that goes hand in hand with the ignorance of a lot of people in this country who are not educated on what's going on or what foreign countries even exist. They couldn't find these places on a map if their lives depended on them. And then the news media is contributing to this by not covering foreign news. So, you know, it's just one more problem that we face. But that's an interesting story. It's really interesting. As we say, it should be grounds for further research.
And Peter, as John pointed out, your latest article that's up on the screen right now, Civil War Breaking Out at Fox News, you said some things on our Friday show, the Hagmann Daily Show, that, I don't know, I have not read your article yet, but do you want to get into some of that behind-the-scenes information that you have?
Yes, I'd be happy to. At this point, I've written in the last 3 months, mainly for American Thinker, but also I've adapted a number of the articles for the Hagmann Report and written several original articles for the Hagmann Report about what we're calling the cable news wars and Fox News in particular. And this may seem like a rather specific area to be interested in, but actually the microcosm here points to the big picture. Fox News, which for many of us, and I'm sure many of our listeners and viewers today, was, since it came on the air in 1996, a real advance in fair and balanced news gathering and presentation. There had never been anything like it in the mainstream media. And for the next two decades, Fox pretty much had its act together. It wasn't perfect. There was always some fake news there and disinformation and people who are a little too far left for my taste. But on the whole, you could turn to Fox News and get leads on stories that were happening, get some initial reporting, then you could follow up on it on your own, on the internet. But starting a year ago, as we know, with the ouster of the co-founder and CEO, Roger Ailes, because of sexual harassment allegations, and then a parade of firings since then. I don't think I need to name them all, but the long story made short is that in the last year, we have had an incremental turn to the left by Fox News, so that today, in many ways, it's hanging by a thread. Now, I was just reviewing before the broadcast today several of my articles that were from two or three months ago, and I one of them that was published on June 12th about the Murdoch boys, and they're the major problem right now with Fox News. They are the sons, the 40-something sons of Rupert Murdoch, who's the guy, the international media mogul who made Fox News. He's pretty conservative. His sons are really two guys with minimal achievement, really undistinguished careers, but they have the benefit of being heirs to Rupert Murdoch's billions, to his empire, and he's turning his whole empire over to them. So they're now pretty much the bosses of Fox News, and they're very far left wing, as are their two wives. And so I pulled up from my article of June 12th on the Murdoch boys this quote by Michael Wolff, who's a very credible reporter on television news and has some good sources. And he said, "It would be hard to imagine how James Murdoch could have been regarded with more contempt by many of the people at Fox News. James was rather exhibit number one of the liberal elite entitlement that Fox had so profitably programmed against." And he goes on to say that we could expect a very fast change towards the left now that James Murdoch and his brother Lachlan are basically taking control. And my source at Fox News, my very high-level source, as well as the source that Doug has, and we've been comparing, he and I have been comparing notes, as you know, about our sources since we first got in touch almost 3 months ago. Our sources, our two sources at Fox News who are very credible, agree that there's a climate of fear there. And so this article that I just posted today at Hagmann Report is titled, The Civil War Breaks Out at Fox News. And there's a photograph of James Murdoch right at the top of the article. And last week, in the wake of this story that grew out of Charlottesville 9 days ago now, the demonstrations there and the death of the one counter-demonstrator, and I mean, that story is just so aggravating to even consider how the deep state, the forces allied against President Trump, however you want to name them or call them, they finally seem to have found an issue that they could sink their teeth in that is going to have some real meat on the bone. And you notice we haven't heard anything about Russia collusion for the last week and a half since they got this Charlottesville and its aftermath story, which has now presented the meme to the country and the world that Donald Trump is not only prejudiced and a racist, but he's sympathetic or empathetic to neo-Nazis and white supremacists. I mean, this is so absurd and ridiculous and fake, and yet it has caught on. So this larger news story in the big world was being reported by Fox News, like every other cable news outlet and newspaper and radio station in the country and in the world, apparently. And it led last week to some interesting on-air developments at Fox News, where you had guests and anchors or hosts at Fox News breaking down into tears as they're trying to cover this story because of the tremendous pressure that surrounds this story. I mean, the other news channels, MSNBC and CNN, were doing reporting that in my 50 years of paying attention to the media, I have never seen anything like it. CNN especially, I think for two or three days, they had characters on the bottom of the screen, text, saying something like, President Trump's, forgetting the exact language, but like his disaster, oh, his off-the-rails news conference. It said that for days on the screen. They were seizing on that news conference as if that news conference of his last Tuesday, which ran 20 minutes, was all the proof that we needed that he's a racist and probably a neo-Nazi, a supporter of David Duke, the Klansman, you name it. You know, again, with zero evidence, as little evidence as they ever had to push the Russia collusion story. But this one had legs, as they say, and it's still going strong today because of the political correctness and the fact that when you charge somebody with being a racist, the charge seems to be enough. You don't have to come forward with proof. A whole bunch of people will stand in line to validate it. You know, Black Lives Matter, the NAACP, the Southern Poverty Law Center. I mean, there are literally hundreds, if not thousands, of organizations out there, most of them tax-exempt, who are just waiting for their chance to call anybody they don't agree with a racist, an anti-Semite, or worse. So now they have President Trump on the run for that. But the microcosm of the story is that when we look at how this affected Fox News in the last week, we see a news organization, Fox News Channel, that is coming apart at the seams. Now, also last week, and I helped to break this story, actually, that actually Drudge broke it on Monday, as we discussed on your radio program on Friday. Last Monday, Drudge tweeted a story or tweet congratulating Laura Ingraham on her imminent move to prime time. So everybody assumed, well, that means she's going to Fox News prime time, which is a good guess. Now, my source at Fox News had told me the same thing several weeks earlier, but swore me to secrecy. So on Tuesday, I got this person's permission to go with my news on the breaking news on the story, which was that, yes, Laura Ingraham would probably get 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. She would not get 9 o'clock, as most of the other journalists were saying, but Sean Hannity would move from 10 to 9 o'clock. So that was kind of good news because Sean Hannity, as we've discussed before, is one of the last holdouts on the Fox News Channel. He's been doing the best reporting of his career in recent months, aided by guests, return guests, who are just superb, including Sarah Carter, who I mentioned earlier, Greg Jarrett, who's a very brilliant attorney who works as an anchor and reporter at Fox News, and he's been weighing in with original reporting on everything that's going on in terms of the deep state trying to sandbag and destroy the administration of President Trump. So Hannity has been doing great work. And now, and by the way, I think one reason is because he, unlike any other host in cable news, as far as I can tell, has editorial control over the hour that he does nightly on Fox News, which is why his show is not cluttered with excessive left-wing guests and, you know, just time wasted. So he really uses the 40 minutes of his show, when you subtract the commercials every night, to great advantage. But so that was an optimistic piece of news last week, that it looks like Sean Hannity is going to be hanging on there going into the fall at 9 o'clock up against Rachel Maddow. But then we see how really the place at Fox News is in chaos. The Murdoch boys could invalidate that decision in a New York minute, and Sean Hannity could be out of there. I mean, just ask Eric Bolling or Charles Payne or Bill O'Reilly how long it takes when the bosses determine it's your time to go and you're gone, you're history, and you can't get back on the air. So I have my fingers crossed, but I think the long view here is that we're up against it and Fox News is going to crumble. By the way, here's an indication of what's going to happen in an hour and a half. I got a news release this morning from Fox News PR department. I'm on their list because of all of the writing I've done. Let me see if I can just call this up here. Because they were promoting, they put out a press release promoting the coverage that they're going to have tonight on Fox News Channel surrounding President Trump's address to the nation at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, in which he's going to announce his decision on how to go forward with the Afghan war. So this press release I got this morning said Brett Baer and Martha McCallum will anchor primetime programming between 8:55 and 10 p.m. Much of that time, President Trump will be speaking, with contributions from Dana Perino, who's, of course, a notorious Bush-era rhino, also senior political analyst Juan Williams. Juan Williams is, I would say he's the number one most reviled or disliked Fox News analyst, according to the 15,000 reader comments I've gotten at American Thinker.
Even more than Shepard Smith?
3 months. Well, they're pretty close, but, you know, Juan has actually got more airtime than Shep, because Shep is most of the time on in the afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern, then he's done. Juan has his own show. He's on the 5, 9 p.m., five nights a week with his four co-hosts. And then he's on all these other shows as an analyst. I mean, he was on Fox News Sunday yesterday, and he was on the Wall Street Journal report yesterday. I thought, you know, how much of this guy do I have to see before I throw my shoe at the TV? I can't take it anymore.
Well, Peter,
he's going to be one of the key analysts tonight. And, I mean, this guy is Mr. Left Wing. You know, I don't need to go into detail. But oh, and the other guest tonight at Fox News, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, is Senator Lindsey Graham. Again, no great friend of President Trump, you know, actually a good buddy of Senator John McCain. They were photographed together with former Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman in Arizona this weekend. And then, fortunately, Hannity will be coming on at 10, and then the 5 special live show at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. And the 5 means a shouting match, including Juan Williams and I don't know. I just can't even stand that show anymore. But, you know, here too, yesterday and today, again, we saw on Fox Jessica Tarlov, far left wing Democrat, you know, and so it goes. It's just one after another. And, you know, it's like the boiling frog. You put the frog in the pot of cold water, you turn up the heat slowly before the frog knows it, he's being boiled alive and he can't even jump out anymore. Well, I think we're being boiled alive here slowly by Fox News over the last year. They've been raising the temperature, you know, ratcheting up the liberal approach, and it's kind of started out subtly, but now it's really taking off. And you know, it's just going to be the way it is. I mean, people have hope that something else will come up to replace Fox News, a network that hasn't yet been started, either built on the stations that Sinclair Broadcasting has. By the way, Sinclair owns Circa News, which Sarah Carter is reporting for, and they also have Cheryl Atkinson reporting for their for a small network of their local affiliates, and Cheryl Atkinson is really excellent. I would love to see her on a really highly accessible cable news channel. You know, there's a couple of others out there. There's the One America News Channel. There's Newsmax TV. So we'll see what happens, but it really looks like the Fox News Channel is slipping away, and it's bad news because, you know, as Doug has pointed out, as I pointed out, this is like the last holdout to anything approaching the truth in the mainstream media to look at what President Trump is doing. And if Fox is a goner, you know, I don't know where we're going to go. What channel are we going to turn to? We're just going to have to go to the internet, but that's not viable for a lot of folks. I mean, this is still the mainstream media. And it has that name for one, for that reason. It's mainstream. And as much as we love the internet and use it 24/7, you know, everyone isn't quite there yet.
Well, you know, Peter, you make some excellent points. And first off, just a quick shout out to the folks over at One America News Network. Now, we've been blessed to feature both Liz Wheeler as well as Stephanie Hamill here at the Hagmann Report. And in fact, Stephanie's going to rejoin us shortly. They've got some fine talent over at One America News Network, so we very much appreciate what they're doing over there. And, you know, you went through a litany, Peter, of who I consider to be some fairly disingenuous investigators, and I'm using investigator very loosely here, particularly Juan Williams. But let me ask you this, your personal opinion. Peter, do you find, be it on Fox News or the other primary cable news networks, are there any genuine liberals left? Are there any genuine progressive commentators that actually mean what they're saying, or have they all gone down the path of Juan Williams? And I would even roll back as far as to say I used to catch a lot of that sort of disingenuous demeanor from Alan Combs as well.
Right. That's an excellent question. And, you know, I've mentioned more than once, I think, the disappearance of a segment that was called the Fox News Insiders, I believe, who for 5 years held down a weekly spot Sunday evenings on Fox News, consisting of Patrick Cadell, Douglas Schoen, and they're two Democrats, classic liberal Democrats. And the third member of their team was John Le Boutillier, a Republican one-term member of Congress. They were a fantastic team who... it was appointment viewing for me. I mean, two out of the three were Democrats, but they really told it like it is. I mean, they had been around for decades. Cadell got his start when he was at Harvard working for George McGovern, and so did I. I worked for George McGovern in 1972, and I'm still sort of proud of it. It's a long story, but, you know, McGovern was a good guy. He was a patriot. He was a bomber pilot in World War II. And, you know, then you evolve from there. But and so did Pat Cadell. And as far as I could tell, he was telling it like it is, you know, sticking it to Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama when they deserved it, which was most of the time, and predicting basically 2 or 3 years ago that something unusual was going to happen in 2016, and we might see somebody come out of nowhere and grab the wave, ride the wave that they felt was building, and ride it all the way to the White House outside of the two conventional parties. And that's exactly what happened with Donald Trump. They predicted it without naming Trump, because that, they were saying that even before he declared a serious interest in running in June of 2015. So, you know, they were still around. Joe Lieberman used to be occasionally featured as a guest on Fox News. You know, he was a relatively straight-talking Democrat. I haven't seen him in the longest time on there. And meanwhile, one by one, these people have been replaced by these absolute hacks who you can just, you know, when they're announced, when they start talking, you can just tune them out, because it's not only going to be a total waste of your time, but it's going to really make you angry. And, you know, there's enough, we're angry enough as it is, just seeing what the real news is out there without listening to one of these liars, you know, spin their story that comes right from the Democratic National Committee or God knows where. So, and then of course the other news channels, CNN and MSNBC are total loss. And, you know, I think since we convened last time, there was the loss at CNN of Jeffrey Lord, who was one of the two reliable conservative analysts that CNN had. And interesting timing there, because they fired Jeffrey Lord, who was a great supporter of President Trump and an excellent journalist. He writes for I'm spacing out on the publication he writes for now, but anyway, he had been on for about 2 years as a defender of President Trump, and he tweeted, he was engaged in a Twitter war with the guy who's the president of Media Matters. And he was so frustrated that he said to this character on Twitter, Heil Hitler, as a satiric comment, saying that really Media Matters is the Hitlerian fascistic group that's trying to get people like Sean Hannity thrown off the air and banning free speech, etc. And instead of his tweet being taken for what it was, CNN used it as an excuse to fire him that same afternoon. So he's gone from CNN. And the other reliable conservative there, conservative Kayleigh McEnany, left on her own. She's a Harvard-educated lawyer, a young woman, very attractive and very well-spoken. And she's now gone to work for the Republican National Committee as their video spokesperson, doing videos, and she's popped up on several Fox News programs recently. But, you know, I think we're going to see more incrementalism at the Fox News channel under the guidance or the leadership of these Murdoch boys, the sons of Rupert Murdoch. And, you know, I hate to sit here in judgment of anybody in this life, and I've looked at these guys, I've researched them, the Murdoch boys, without knowing anything about them to start, and I am just not coming up with anything that gives me any reassurance that they are anything like reasonable individuals who should be running a news channel, a news entity, or that they're fair at all. I mean, and you know, James Murdoch, who's pretty much, well, he's now the chairman, the CEO of 21st Century Fox, so he's really the boss of the whole team now. He was working in England when the phone hacking scandal went on at one of his father's, Rupert Murdoch's, properties, the Tabloid newspaper over there, and he later had to testify twice in an English proceeding, a media information gathering proceeding under oath about what was going on there. And it's been alleged that he lied in that testimony because he certainly knew what was going on in terms of the phone hacking, but he tried to play dumb. And, you know, before that, you look at this guy, he dropped out of Harvard to start a hip-hop record company in the 1990s. That failed, but he was able to sell it to his father's 20th Century Fox, so that bailed him out there. And it's been one undistinguished career move after the other since then, in my opinion, as it's been for his brother Lachlan. And now these guys are running the show at Fox News. I mean, and you compare them to Roger Ailes, who basically created Fox News out of whole cloth and then was forced to resign a year ago and then died in May of this year. And, I mean, Roger Ailes is one of the great media figures of the 20th century. He long before he got involved with creating Fox News, he had a long, distinguished career in both conservative politics and media. But he was pushed aside, and now these two Murdoch boys are, I mean, they might not have the titles as president of Fox News or whatever, but, you know, they're the ones running the show. That's who my sources say, and that's who Doug's source says. And it's obvious. I mean, we're not the only ones saying that. There's a number of journalists who say it's the Murdoch boys who are in control there. So, you know, I think soon we're just going to have to kiss Fox News goodbye. And I hope that Sean Hannity, can hang on. And if not, I hope that he can find a new gig where he will still be able to come into our homes, because he's still pretty young, in his mid-50s. His work is not finished yet. And as I say, he's, you know, Sean Hannity, people, it's popular for a lot of people, especially who consider themselves conservative purists, to put Sean Hannity down. But I can say that he's a good guy. You know, he's capable of learning and of growing. He's very, very sincere, and just judging by his work in the last months, he's done exceptional work on both his three-hour daily radio show and on his nightly television program. And, you know, there's nobody who comes close. I mean, in an article that I will be writing about him eventually, just focusing on him sort of biographically, I think he is really the number one conservative media personality in the United States. Now, Rush Limbaugh is a name that usually comes to mind, and that's not to put Rush down at all. Rush has the number one radio show, talk radio show, and has for three decades. But Sean has the number two radio show, and he has the number one TV show. So I think on balance, you'd have to say Sean is pretty much number one. You know, maybe neck and neck with Rush Limbaugh, but I'd give the slight edge to Sean Hannity there. And, I mean, they're both really worthwhile to listen to check out, to see, you know, what they're talking about and what their perspective is. They've proven themselves over the decades. You know, they don't have tens of millions of listeners, and in Hannity's case, 3 or 4 million viewers a night for no reason. They've earned it.
No, Peter, you said a whole lot there, and you're exactly right. And, you know, Hannity has been doing a magnificent job of, you know, telling the truth and getting that message out there. He's one of the only ones, if not the only one on the mainstream, who is actually, you know, digging in and telling it like it is. I want to go back to, you mentioned the press conference coming up in an hour that Trump is holding to give an update on tactics and what we're going to do in Afghanistan. Do you believe that, I know this is something he was against his whole campaign. Now we know there is give and take in his position of power. I said all that to say this. Do you think that he's going to increase troops in Afghanistan? I know that's the gossip. That's the rumor. I don't trust the rumors. But in your own personal opinion, what do you expect from Trump tonight?
Well, the initial reports of people who have heard leaks, I guess, they're tossing this number of 4,000 additional U.S. forces will be committed to Afghanistan. But there's a caveat, to be used primarily in an advisory role. Now, I've heard a number of other analysts in the past 24 to 48 hours on the news channels and in print say, you know, this is a fool's errand. No foreign power has ever been able to succeed there. The Russians got kicked out. We've been at it for, 16 years now with no end in sight. And, I mean, one is always tempted to put one's military analyst hat on. And I have to say that in my career, I've done a lot more research and interviewing and sourcing on a different area of the Middle East relating to Israel, Lebanon, Iraq, Iran, especially the original Gulf War, and then the war against Saddam Hussein in 2003. So I'm going to reserve judgment on this because I really don't know, and I think it's going to be a really tough call. But, you know, one thing came to mind when I heard critics on CNN today already blaming President Trump, saying, well, no, he should just pull out. You know, well, I mean, their hero, Barack Hussein Obama, didn't pull out. In fact, if I'm not mistaken here, I think more American troops died in Afghanistan under the leadership of Barack Hussein Obama than they did under President George W. Bush. Isn't that how it worked out there? So,
I'm not
you know,
sure.
I mean, their hero, you know, I mean, in fact, there were a number of military leaders, as you know, during Obama's regime who said, you know, we shouldn't draw down so fast. That actually, we were in a better position when George W. Bush handed the war over to Obama in January of 2009. And Obama, of course, being anti-military and everything else, wanted to go slow and withdraw. He announced our withdrawal date, then he revised that and limped along there. And now it's up to President Trump and the military today to try to clean up that mess that Barack Hussein Obama left them. So, you know, I have great sympathy for President Trump and the situation and the generals and the troops for the situation they find themselves in now. But, you know, I also think it would be a terrible loss on one hand to just pull out and let the place fall into the hands control of the Taliban in light of the several thousand Americans who sacrificed their lives, and I believe 20,000 plus Americans who were wounded or injured in the Afghanistan war, many of them with permanent for life injuries. So, You know, I would tend to, and I think President Trump is probably doing this, I would tend to trust the military and their judgment in this. I mean, why not? You know, the U.S. military has proven to be pretty effective and pretty good. And if they haven't done the job in the last 8 years, I don't think it's their fault. I think it's the commander-in-chief. Now we've got a credible commander-in-chief, so let him command.
You're absolutely right, Peter. And just as a side note, we only got about a minute and a half left. You will be joining us also next Monday, August 28th. That's the day we have in-studio guest T.C. Joseph, who will be with us. And we really look forward to that. Peter, if I can, one last question. Anything you want to give a spoiler to what you're going to be writing about this week?
Yeah, I'm going to be following up on the Fox News stuff, and also in the big picture, just the insanity of how President Trump has been sandbagged, apparently with a major effect here, major impact finally, by the fake news of Charlottesville. That's an aftermath. That's a very sensitive area to get into, but American Thinker has been doing excellent reporting on that. I haven't done any of it yet. I'll do it from the media angle, but I'd recommend if people are interested to go back there. The last weeks of reporting is on the front page. And also I did a little update on the eclipse. I posted at Hagman Report two photographs I took of the eclipse today, hopefully showing a bit of an artistic side, but people are invited to check that out as well. But once again, a great pleasure to be with both of you today, John and Joe. I look forward to next Monday. We'll see what happens between now and then.
Peter Chalka, thank you so much. Again, great investigative journalist, writes for the American Thinker as well as the Hagman Report. And go check out the stuff that he posted on Hagman Report today. It's very interesting. And I'm going to definitely check out the eclipse story. I haven't opened it up yet. But thank you for doing that, Peter. Until next time, we'll talk to you then. Folks, we'll be right back with Doc Marquis after these messages. Don't go anywhere.
Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. What Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right, you need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available, anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greenovative.com, that's greenovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's small, smokeless, fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com, PreciousTimberProfits.com.